Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
It is 8:35. I'm Howard Philbin. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 Chai FM. We continue to try and figure out what is happening with the other states in the region, like Qatar, Saudi Arabia, as the U.S. continues to move those relationships forward. In many ways, and as I've said to you a number of times, I think it is quite smart of the U.S. because in doing so, they isolate Iran. But that's only valuable if they will push Iran, if the U.S. is prepared to push Iran to where it needs to be. There's a lot of money involved, and money corrupts. We know that. We've certainly seen that. What does all of this mean? Jonathan Feldstein, founder of Genesis 123 Foundation. Good morning. How are you?
Howard, good morning. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I am good, thank you. The region is changing, and it's changing fairly quickly. It might not feel it as we report the news in days, but the reality is over the last 600 days, the whole region seems to have changed. How's it starting to look, and what does this mean?
Well, it does seem like this week, maybe things have changed a little bit in terms of the aid distribution that's taking place. And I think the big talk about that, which is some truth to it, that Hamas is largely sidelined from the aid distribution, and they've been warning civilians not to participate in it. And the civilians have been politely giving Hamas the middle finger because they need aid. And I think that that's a positive thing. The question that still remains is, where does Hamas linger? Israeli troops still taking control of other parts of Gaza, and fighting isn't stopped. So the fighting isn't stopped, and we don't know what's going to, when, if and when Hamas will in fact somehow be defeated. But the ideology that they represent is corruptive throughout Gazan society. And we must remember that 600 days into this war, since the massacre of October 7th, there's still 58 people who are being held hostage, who are getting none of the humanitarian aid, and none of the 2 million people who are receiving the humanitarian aid have thought it was important enough to try and identify and release the hostages.
So in other words, it hasn't really impacted positively on the ground.
The positive impact on the ground is that Hamas may soon no longer be in control to the extent that it was. But there are a lot of variables in there, and I'm not prepared. I'm not a prophet, and I'm not prepared to be prophetic or tell anyone what's going to happen. Certainly, talk of releasing hostages is great, but you know, it's 600 days. Tomorrow, 601. Maybe the numbers are made up, but that represents something like 13,000 cumulative days of war crimes of taking hostages and holding them. That's not changed. Where there's talk of deals coming, and something I read, I guess today or yesterday of Trump telling Netanyahu not to be so aggressive because he's going to mess up some of the deals, and the deals might call for getting back 50% of the living hostages and 50% of the dead hostages. That still leaves 50%, and that's just an unacceptable scenario, that this is going to drag on and on and on and on.
Yeah, and what's so strange is that you have this bravado and this very, very strong, tough talk by Trump, but at the end of the day, are we seeing anything that different in terms of Iran than we saw with Biden?
I'm very concerned about the tough talk, because this is a neighborhood in which tough talk must be met with action. And I'm seeing, and I haven't made a list of them, and I'd be afraid to do that because I don't want to show my hand, our hand, or a losing hand. I think that's the better way, to our adversaries, to our enemies. But you know, from even before he was inaugurated, he was saying, if the hostages are not released, there's going to be hell to pay. And there have been broad statements like that since on a multiple number of times, threats that if there's not a deal with Iran, then the U.S. is going to have to take military action. But at some point, and I think he would know this from his art of the deal and doing the deal in general, but especially in the Middle East, which maybe he doesn't know, and I'm sure Steve Witkoff doesn't know, and I don't know if anyone in his administration truly knows, if you keep talking and don't have action behind it, then you're going to be trampled on and made a fool. And you alluded to, which is the essence of the article that I just published, all the deals. You make it financial deals, which ultimately sells shares of America to America's adversaries, to the people who are funding all of the anti-Semitic pro-Hamas protests and who for decades have invested in and own chairmanships in American universities and faculty positions. If you continue to sell out all of these things to people who are straight Islamists and have no true pro-Western values without consequences, I really am afraid for what that might bring.
Yeah, it's very, very concerning. And it's always this thought of even if you can withstand the pressure, or if you are able to respect the law in a certain way, it doesn't mean that your adversary or the next person will be able to. In other words, if you are prepared to do a deal with these countries and you are above being influenced, which I would argue anyway, I don't know that anybody is fallible. Or is infallible, but what about the next person? So now you've set up this whole system where there's this huge amount of money coming in from these regions. I cannot see how this ends well.
Right, correct, and it's establishing other precedents to do so, particularly with what appears to be direct negotiations with Hamas. I'm old enough to remember when Jimmy Carter broke the prohibition of negotiating directly with what was then the PLO, and how that's corrupted things. And now the PLO is the Palestinian Authority, and the Palestinian Authority, some consider an actual state. But there's actual negotiation directly with these terrorists. And the fact that the U.S. is doing it, and because it's Trump, and because I think conservatives who voted for him don't support Hamas, but don't want to give backlash against the president who they voted for and about whom the jury remains out whether or not what he's doing vis-a-vis policy and actions and deals is in fact going to be a good thing. And some credit him as having the ultimate ability to masterfully orchestrate exactly everything in the right order. And it's hard to say that maybe, no, that's not true, but there's nothing that's yet showing that it is indeed true. And if it's in fact not that, then that means one straw ruins the whole deal and everything can come crashing down. And that's where it becomes much more dangerous.
The other part of it is I don't know if you remember as a kid watching those puppet shows where you'd see where the kids, as kids, we would see somebody sneaking up and then, you know, they would turn around, but nobody would be there. It feels as though we want to scream to Trump that Iran is deliberately taking its time because they want to continue, and they are continuing with their uranium enrichment, all whilst he negotiates and tries to come to a deal that'll never be honored by the Iranians anyway.
Correct, 100%. And that, again, I'm comforted by what a host who hosted me at a speaking engagement in Maryland earlier this month said. He thinks that maybe Trump is just having these negotiations for the U.S. to put the ordinance in place so that when these talks inevitably fail, the U.S. is ready to strike. And we've seen three European nations who haven't been so friendly to Israel recently But they're warning the U.S. administration, the time is running out of this hourglass, because the ridiculous JCPOA, the Iran deal from 2015, had this thing that allows a sunset clause, meaning in the fall this year, 10 years after adopting JCPOA, Iranians can begin to produce enriched uranium without any hesitation and move toward weapons grades. All they need to do is hold on till then. And at least some Europeans are saying, President Trump, you need to watch this, because we can't let that happen. But I don't really know who's got the eye on the ball, Howard, and it's terribly scary.
It is absolutely very, very scary. Jonathan Feldstein, Genesis 123 Foundation, thank you as always for bringing us that perspective. What do you think? Are you do you have the same concerns? Do you think that it is in good hands? Let me know. I'm taking a look now at some of your messages. Linda W. talking about the interview earlier, the conversation with Terrence Corrigan, saying Terrence Corrigan is so cool, interesting, and brilliantly brained. I wish we were twins. That is very, very, very funny. And Mark B. also talking about that interview, saying Ramaphosa has proven to be false and two-faced. If you take the anger and animation at Malema's past actions, character speeches into account, it is definitely hate speech. And I see that Talaso, when people talk about the good old days, referring to apartheid era, is it not just as awful as Malema chanting freedom chants of freeing themselves from apartheid? So maybe it is. Maybe it is. Except that good old days is a phrase. I no one's used it on the show. It's obviously just a theoretical question you're asking. Good old days often refers to one aspect of a time gone by. In other words, I grew up during apartheid. I was a child during apartheid. I have good memories of my childhood. It doesn't mean that I ever thought apartheid was good. I didn't. I fought I was part of the anti-apartheid movement as soon as I was old enough to do so. So certainly I didn't. But does that mean I can't think of my childhood at all in terms of anything positive? No, I don't think that is quite the same. In a normal context, good old days means good old days. In a normal context, shoot the Boer, shoot the farmer, kill the Boer, I think means something, very clearly quite violent. But tell me your thoughts. 0618951019. It is 8:48.